side for centuries. By 1975, the country had splintered into bitter factions, the beginnings of a 15-year civil war, a confusing collision of competing interests and forces, parties and militia. The Shia Amal Group, the Christian Lebanese Forces, the Progressive Socialist Party. The question is, what caused the civil war? Was it the Christian right versus the Muslim left? The Lebanese native versus the Palestinian foreigner? Each protagonist found arms and support from abroad. The Falanges and their Zionist allies, the Palestinians and their Syrian allies. In 1982, a group that broke away from Amal formed Hezbollah, a young group of Shia Muslims who were inspired by the Islamic Revolution in Iran. On June 6, 1982, the Israeli war machine invaded Lebanon. It started with the Beaufort Castle in the south, working up north to Beirut along the coastline. This was followed with 72 bombing missions in Beirut. President Reagan described the Zionist bombing of Beirut as unfathomable and senseless. In 1985, the Israeli army partially withdrew out of the southern part of the country, up to the area of Jezzine, occupied since 1967. However, it conveniently declared parts of Lebanon as an alleged security zone for its border. 1991 saw the end of the civil war with the brokering and formalization of the Ta'if Agreement. Between the Syrians and Lebanese, the agreement signified the establishment of a new government and the disarming of all militant groups. In 2000, Israel withdrew its troops from a large territory in southern Lebanon, which it had been occupying since 1978. A significant issue relating to the withdrawal remains unsettled. This relates to the status of certain villages in adjacent land on the eastern side of El Sheikh Mountain, known as the Shabar Farms, which had been occupied by the Zionist regime since 1967. On July 12, 2006, Hezbollah captured two Israeli soldiers across the border in southern Lebanon. They had been conducting military operations in the area of Aita el-Sha'ib, near where the Shabar Farms are located. Israeli media claimed they had been kidnapped in Israeli territory, and this gave the Zionist regime a much-needed pretext, an excuse even, to invade Lebanon. Analysts believe this was to compensate for the humiliating defeat and forced withdrawal of the Zionists in Lebanon in 2000. The Zionist state invaded southern Lebanon confident it could eliminate Hezbollah. This was the beginning of the 33-day war. Between 2006 and 2008, the Israeli-appointed Winograd Commission concluded the campaign ended without Israel's clear military victory. In other words, the 33-day war was a political and military fiasco. Israel had been preparing for an attack on Lebanon months before the capture of the soldiers. In today's epilogue, we will be reviewing the 33-day war by Gilbert Achkar and Michael Wachowski.
Hello, I'm Derek Conway. Greetings and a very warm welcome to Epilogue, Press TV's book review show. I'd like to emphasise that guest views expressed on Epilogue are their own and not necessarily those of Press TV. As that introduction showed, since the 1920s, the kaleidoscopic nature of Lebanon's people has necessitated an extraordinarily complex web of community and religious alliances. Gilbert Achkar and Michael Wachowski's book, The 33-Day War, Israel's War on Hezbollah in Lebanon and its Aftermath, gives thoughtful perspective on this. The rise of Hezbollah, both as a political and military force, was a remarkable development that tempted Israel into launching a pre-planned armed strike that then went horribly wrong for the invading Israeli forces. Despite far more advanced weaponry and scale of supply, they were surprised to meet unexpected levels of resistance. Following the ceasefire and Israeli withdrawal, a kind of normality has resumed in Lebanon, with Beirut thriving once again. Joining me in the studio are Tufik Mashnouk, the Associate Director of the Institute for Policy Research and Development, Dr. Michael Kerr, Director of the Centre for the Study of Divided Societies and Lecturer in Middle Eastern Studies at King's College London, and Labour Member of Parliament Andy Love, Chairman of the Lebanon Group in the British Parliament. Gentlemen, welcome and thank you for joining us. So if I could come to you first, Tufik. I mean, this is a very good sort of history of the development and issues in Lebanon, particularly the conflicts. But, I mean, would you see it today, the perspective, would you regard Lebanon and Israel as enemy states still?
I think that's quite a complicated question. The book does use that phrase in the introduction, but it just kind of throws it in and then leaves it at that. It really depends how you define enemy. I think that if you were to try and delve deeper into the notion of enemy states, there has to be an aggressor in the equation. And in that sense, I would say that Israel would fall as an enemy state of Lebanon. I don't quite understand why Lebanon would be an enemy state of Israel. So, I mean, looking at your question as being one of, are they still enemy states? We have to really understand whether they were ever enemy states as such. But moving forward, I think we need to, for a peaceful solution and a lasting solution, we need to kind of move away from that mindset of trying to understand whether two states are enemy states as though it's an absolute thing.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Michael, you've made a study of divided societies around the world. It's your expertise. What is your take on this?
Well, it's funny you mentioned enemy states. That was the point I was going to pick up on from the introduction and say that the book really begins with a false premise of Lebanon and Israel as warring states or enemy states. They're nothing of the sort, and their history since their inception in 43 and 48 have been one of different communities, Jewish and Maronite, eyeing each other over the border and wondering how an alliance between minority groups in the Middle East could be forged. And they've come at this relationship at cross purposes in many different times. And the war of 1982 and 1983 shows this, and the US become embroiled in it. And the US support Israel in trying to bring about a Christian Western-backed end or solution to the civil war. And something very similar happens in 2006. And the lessons of that conflict were not learnt there. But things seem to have changed positively since then, in the sense that since Obama has come in, there has been a detente between Syria and Saudi Arabia, which has allowed the government in Lebanon to be formed and a power-sharing administration to be arranged, which seems to have satisfied most of the main players, which is not what people were predicting after 2006, which was ultimately a second round in the near future.
Yeah. I mean, Andy, you've recently been at Beirut as chairman of the All-Party Group. I mean, what is your take on this antipathy between Lebanese and Israeli people?
Well, I think it's unhelpful to term it in those the way that the book seems to do as being enemy states. The result of the election, we've now seen the formation of a government in the Lebanon, seems to me to be a positive step forward. As has already been said, Lebanese society is very complex, and of course after the 1967 war, when large numbers of Palestinians made their home in the...
I think the second largest grouping, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And it was that complexity that really has made life very difficult between Israel and the Lebanon.
Yeah.
That's not to say that that doesn't continue to be a factor. That's not to say that there are many outstanding issues. There is a very strong feeling in the Lebanon that the Israelis have not acted as a good neighbour, and there are remaining issues over the border area.
And lots of suspicions there.
Absolutely. And of course that was made much worse by the adventure of the 2006 incursion. So there's a great deal of trust that has to be re-established.
Yeah.
But I think we have to look on it positively, that that is possible, and that the Lebanon could play a very positive role in moving forward on the Middle Eastern settlement.
Yeah. I mean, Beirut is clearly a very sort of vibrant melting pot of cultures and people and attitudes. And I suppose one of the strengths of Hezbollah when it grew as a political force was arguably because in the 60s, when Beirut was economically doing quite well, a lot of Lebanese were sort of left out of this. So there was a group of people doing extraordinarily well and having a great time and everything. But there are a lot of people that are sort of watching and the sort of disaffected nature. Is that going to happen again? Do you think now that Beirut is sort of picking up, tourism is coming back, money's coming back into the area, are there going to be people feeling, well, you know, this is happening, but it's not affecting me, I'm not benefiting from this?
It might do. I mean, there is a disparity in Lebanon, although I wouldn't say that looking back to the 60s and so on, yes, maybe the overwhelming majority of the affluent were perhaps Maronite, but there's still a disconnect within the Maronite community in Lebanon. So you do get, amongst all confessions within Lebanon, people of various classes. And this kind of polarity that exists in Lebanon is one to observe very carefully when trying to understand the alliances that take place. You tend to find the more affluent classes are the ones that may look to the West. So looking forward, I think we need to observe that very carefully. But coming on a point that's mentioned earlier, it's not just, I think, an issue of distrust. It's also an issue of law. And looking forward, we need to be very clear that international law, the relations, you know, governing relations between states, needs to be applied. It's much deeper than just an issue of distrust. I mean,
yeah.
Israel virtually every other day violates Lebanese airspace.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, because that's how Hezbollah gained its force, because of this disparate attitude to involvement in economic success. I mean, do you see, Michael, as an academic, that this is changing this time, or is the sort of political message of Hezbollah still going to have a resonance amongst the poorer people?
Well, it's a question of power, and in the Lebanese political pie, the disenfranchised Shia in southern Lebanon, and leaders like Musa Sadr and Hassan Nasrallah, would certainly have viewed the old national pact as a carve-up between political Maronitism and their Sunni allies. And that has changed in the sense demographically, and also in terms of the power and the external linkage politics that the Hezbollah has with Syria and Iran, in terms of the constitutional, financial, religious and military backing that they get. And what was very interesting in the protests around Centreville, downtown Beirut, around the parliament, which is newly constructed in the opulent Western and Ottoman and Saudi representation, was the Shia community there taking ownership of Beirut. And also you see the Hezbollah supporters wrapping themselves in the Lebanese flag and taking ownership of the symbols of Lebanon as well. So there's an internal conflict there, which is equally salient to that that has the external dynamics that the book in question is discussing.
Yeah, I mean, how did you find it, Andy, as an observer coming into this without necessarily all the sort of history that's been going on? I mean, did you think it was hopeful when you were there, or did you think, you know, some people are doing well out of this, but there's an awful lot of people being left behind?
I mean, I think the thing that we haven't spoken about yet is the involvement within Lebanon of external forces.
Yeah.
I mean, the March the 8th grouping, continuing when we were there, they were very vocal in their concern about US involvement and Western involvement, particularly, of course, from France, which historically has had a very close relationship with Lebanon. On the other side, of course, there were great concern about Iranian and Syrian involvement. And I think that that complicates and makes more difficult resolving some of the internal issues that we've talked about.
And you've met a lot of the leaders. I mean, is the UN role, is that trusted? You've got the big boss of the UN visiting the British Parliament this week. I mean, is the UN presence regarded as trustworthy?
I think it's regarded as helpful.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there are divided views about the role that Hezbollah has played.
Yeah.
Clearly, there are many who believe that they have saved the nation, but there are others who would much rather take the guns out of the equation within Lebanon. And the UN is hopefully going to assist that process. But I think that it is for the Lebanese to resolve the political differences in order to help achieve that. Mm-hmm. But when I was there, there was some hope, I think, that's now been realised. I think it's taken longer than certainly we expected when we were there in July, that a government would emerge, that government would be independent. The whole issue about a veto was one that was
4 months, isn't it?
Yeah, it's taken 4 months. Yeah. But I think that we've seen a significant step forward with the emergence of the government. I hope that that government will be able to stamp its authority on the nation. But it has to do that as it recognises, and I think everyone across the political spectrum recognises, there has to be a consensus for Lebanon to work effectively. And that's going to be very difficult in this
particular
climate.
It took Belgium even longer recently to form a government, so it's not necessarily a Lebanese problem.
They're still in trouble.
But I think, I mean, one of the things that the authors point out in this book is that when Israeli launched that amazing military barrage, part of the motivation came out afterwards, according to the book and the press coverage, was to sort of hammer the Lebanese so hard that they'd say, if we kick out Hezbollah, then, you know, it'll all stop and it'll all be nice and harmony. But that wasn't the effect it had, of course. So, in fact, Israeli rather helped Hezbollah establish itself because it meant, has that sort of added to the folklore, do you think? Has this helped the political situation?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, the notion, first of all, is absolutely true that it didn't work that way at all. And they were very, very naive to think that would work. It gave Hezbollah standing in the Arab world that it didn't have previously. and Israel was largely humiliated, as the Israeli generals and the commissions admitted. And it's typical of Israeli attitude. I mean, they did it again in Gaza. Shimon Peres was quoted in the Jerusalem Post as saying that, we're doing, the aim of Israel is to deal a serious blow to the people of Gaza. He was very explicit in that it's to the people of Gaza. Mm-hmm. So they lose the appetite of throwing rockets over the border. Sure. So I think similar to what the U.S. did in the Middle East and what Israel has played in that role, all they've done is managed to shift public opinion against them, I think, which has contributed to resistant movements and the popularity of resistant movements mm-hmm. in the Middle East and possibly even wider.